All right. So we do a weekly podcast where we talk about freelancing and freelancer stuff. And we've talked about all kinds of stuff like setting your rate or what are some of the other topics we talked about? We talked about marketing, getting started, marketing. Yeah, marketing. Lots of marketing. So anyway, fantastic. What we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about marketing through a conference like this. And there are a lot of things that we can do to do that kind of stuff. I'm not as much an expert on this, but I know that these guys are. So why don't we go ahead and introduce ourselves, and then we'll start talking. So I guess I'll go first. I'm Charles Max Wood. I do this podcast, Ruby Rogues, JavaScript Jabber, and on occasion I actually post to a few other podcasts that I've kind of let slide. But I am a freelance developer in Ruby on Rails, and I live here in Utah. So
I'm Evan Light, and I talk too much. Oh wait, sorry. Right, I'm Evan Light. I'm also a freelance Ruby developer. I also run the Ruby Decamp Unconference. I've got the shirt on today. And occasionally speak at conferences about Ruby stuff and whatever the heck's on my mind that people let me talk about at conferences.
Cool. I'm Dave Brady. I'm the Chief Metaphor Officer at Slide Rule Labs. What does it mean? Somebody asked me, what's Chief Metaphor Officer? What is that like? And I said, it's like being the Chief Simile Officer, only without the word like. So, I do the Ruby Rogues podcast with Chuck, and we're available for hire, and that's me.
Oh yeah, right. I think we're pretty much all available for hire.
But me especially.
My name's
not
Tim
Dave
Connor.
Especially.
My name's Tim. Oh, drop the mic. My name's Tim Connor. I run Cloud City Development, which is a small agile shop in San Francisco, and there are more people. I have a couple guys here. I employ a bunch of remotes, actually, because there's this thing that no one in San Francisco will hire remote. So if you're willing to work with people, very few. So if you're willing to work with people, you can get a much better deal.
All right. So let's start talking about this. So one thing that's kind of come up, I don't know if it's been on the podcast, but at least chatting with Eric Davis, is that he likes to point out that when you go to the conferences, you're usually talking to other geeks, other programmers. Those programmers are not the people who are going to be hiring you. And so he's kind of like, you know, so you're not talking to your target market. And, I think there are some answers to that. You know, you can get referrals and things, but is there a way that you can reach your target market through the developers at the conferences?
Okay, I got to go first to this one because first I have to make fun of Eric because he's not here. Eric's a bit more of an introvert than most of the freelancers I know, so he doesn't really like conferences that much. I love going to Ruby conferences because I don't get to hang out with nerds like these unless I talk to them online or I actually spend money to go to a conference. So, oh my God, quality of life means going to conference, you know, is good. I get something out of it other than just for my business. But on top of that, talking at conferences is a slower form of marketing because it's indirect, but I've gotten all the work that I've gotten because of talks I've done at conferences. Thank you, Dave. All the talks I've done at conferences and from running Ruby Decamp. So it does work. It's just slower in that you're not necessarily talking to the people who would hire you. In some cases, you are. There are sometimes, you know, senior people who actually control budgets who small entrepreneurs who are looking for help. But word gets around. I mean, it's basically a form of paying it forward, that you're giving back to the community. People recognize that, and that you're showing you have something of value, and therefore you're worth working with.
Yeah, one other thing that I've seen, because I have the same problem with my podcasts and screencasts and stuff, is that, you know, most of the work that I do targets developers. You know, it's something that they're going to listen to or they're going to watch and, you know, learn something from. And so I'm not really putting something together that the guy with the business idea is going to go, oh, I really ought to watch that because it's this or that. You know, it tells me how to you know, put together my product or tells me that this guy knows how to do it. But one thing that I did find was that some of these entrepreneurs are just smart enough to decide, hey, why don't I try and do this myself? And so what happens is they wind up listening to a programming podcast, or they wind up coming to Mountain West Ruby Conference because they're thinking, if I go to the conference, then I can learn how to build my app. And what winds up happening instead is they get exposed to somebody that, you know, they realize programming's hard. You know, knowing everything I need to know to build this app is hard. And then there are a whole bunch of people here who know how to do that. But at the same time, you know, they realize this. And so if you come out and you're saying, I'm a freelance developer, I'm available for hire, and you're talking to something that they need, then sometimes you are talking to your target or target market, even though you're at a place that's primarily populated by people who aren't.
I think it's entirely mythical that you're not talking to your target audience here. A lot of these people work for companies who are willing to hire contractors, and it turns out that the engineers can talk to their bosses, and if you have them convinced, you are a long way towards getting contracts. Whereas if you were talking to the entrepreneur anyways, he's not going to know if you're blowing smoke up your ass. Whereas if you convince an engineer, then their boss is probably going to actually listen to you. And it's also the other important part, which is brand awareness. Like, a lot of marketing is slow in getting your name out there. So speaking at conferences, blogging, doing podcasts, etc. Also then help that when you have a potential client, then they know who you are. So it's not just the direct sales. Like, there is a difference. I'd say don't confuse marketing and sales. Yes, this is not a sales channel, but it's totally a marketing channel to get your name out there.
Yeah, it's something we talked about a little bit when we had the broad talk about marketing, and I keep touting the book Get Clients Now. Speaking at conferences is one of the top three or four ways that it's listed in that book to market yourself. But the point is to pick things that you're comfortable with. Like, Eric doesn't like being around tons of people, and I love talking with people. So Eric blogs, he does a lot of open source. I talk too much.
It turns out, I think, part of the reason that people don't think conferences aren't good sales channels or marketing channels is they just need to work on their elevator pitch. Because if you're coming here and you're just listening to people talk, and then you're just talking tech, and you never fit in the fact that, oh, by the way, I'm available for hire, which I think a lot of people who are don't remember to put in there, you're going to go, wow, I didn't get anything out of that conference. Whereas if every time you're talking to someone, you're like, start with, by the way, when you're asking what you do, I'm a freelancer, and then you get talking tech, they're going to remember that. And if you get that out, that every person you talk to, you will get work out of it. I almost guarantee it. Like, I've met plenty of guys who you don't know until 20 minutes into a conversation that they're looking for work. And it's like, wow, if I knew that earlier, if I hadn't gotten that question in there, I would have never known I might want to hire you.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. The other thing that I've noticed is that as you talk to people about some of these technical things, it in a lot of cases will become apparent that you have an expertise that they need. And so, yeah, you're not talking to somebody who needs you to build a full-on app, but it's like, I really need to scale this up, and I don't know anything about NoSQL. And so as you're talking to them, well, I've used these solutions, and I found that these different things, you know, apply in these different situations, you might wind up getting more of a consulting instead of a build somebody their app kind of thing, and wind up getting that kind of work instead. And it's paying work, and in those cases, you actually get to work with other developers instead of being the sole technical expert on the project you're working on.
And you should charge more for consulting work. If it's a small piece of work, rather than if you're doing dedicated 6 weeks, 40 hours, and versus you're doing, oh, I'm consulting a little for here or there, and you charge the same amount, the second one can be worth not as much. That's a whole talk I guess you guys have had other. Evan keeps giving me scuzzy faces for everything I say.
I'm disagreeing with some of these things, but they're really personal disagreements. I just hate Tim. I'm kidding. I like Tim. I tend to try to take a fairly laid-back approach to my business in that I don't want to think about it too much like a business. It's an extension of me. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I try hard to do is not bullshit people ever. Just I try to tell them how it is, so, or at least how I see it. I don't necessarily know how it is. I feel funny charging variable rates depending on the work. I know different freelancers feel differently about that. If they can solve someone's incredibly hard problem in an hour, then and as opposed to taking hundreds of hours, they'd still charge the same amount of money. I'm a little iffy on that one. What I was really starting to wince at, though, was the use of the term branding and elevator pitch, and I hate feeling...
I live in SF, what can I say?
Yeah, you what? Sorry.
I live in SF.
It's I know. I feel you. You're living in San Francisco. All the people I meet from there speak the startup biz lingo. To me, it's just telling, you know, talking to people and sharing who I am and trying to understand who they are. And if one thing I guess I look for with customers, potential clients, with just people in general, is are these people that I can relate to? Are these people who can relate to me? Because the last thing I want is a client who I can't communicate effectively with and or I feel no empathy for.
Oh, certainly. And I'm not advocating not just being friendly and talking to people. But if you only get at a setting like this, you could meet 100 people, and some of them you might only chat with for 5 minutes. Yeah. And you have no way of knowing, and that's why I'm saying this is a marketing channel, you have no way of knowing which developers here work for a company that is desperately looking for people. And it's just getting the word out, however you want to phrase it. If you don't make sure that the people talking to you know, oh, by the way, we take work, you just totally lost what might have been the big contract that got you through the whole year.
Yeah, one thing that I thought was interesting, too, about what Evan was saying was that, you know, he likes to think of it more of an extension of himself. Is that kind of what you're saying? And the thing is you kind of run the risk of having it. I mean, you need to draw that line between it being something that you spend time on and it being a business. And you need to figure that out. And so I think what Tim's saying is actually very relevant with a lot of the business lingo. And you know. Yeah, everybody has their different style, and I think that's fine. But if you're not thinking of it as a business and you're not thinking of it as, you know, I have this opportunity to at least let people know that I'm available for hire, you know, and you don't have that elevator pitch, you don't have, you know, that value proposition that you can give to somebody. And, you know, you're not trying to do a hard sell, but you need to at least be thinking about this as, you know, this is a business, I need to find clients, I need to make money. And, you know, you can still do that and have an organic, friendly, nice conversation with somebody. And you're not being super commercial. But, you know, it's important to think about that and realize that this is a marketing channel. It is something that you need to be considering. And it's perfectly okay to let people know that, you know, you're out there to make money so that you can support yourself.
I think a lot of people say that they're afraid of
the M word.
They're of marketing, but they're afraid of what, Mormons?
Not Mormons, marketing.
They're afraid of doing sales, right? I hate doing sales. And so they don't want to come schmooze, and they don't want to, and you're not afraid of doing sales. You're afraid of being seen as a salesman. And when you come to one of these things, that's actually a good fear, because what you're really saying in favor of is that you want to be authentic.
Right. It's not fear of being seen as a salesman, because it's how you feel.
Right.
It's all about how you feel. I mean,
right.
And get too solipsistic.
But the reality is that you come to this and you're freelancing, you're looking for work. Be authentic. Yeah. Go ahead. It's okay to tell people, hey, I freelance. You know, and if you're, you know, if you have time in your pipeline, we call that being desperate. You know, let people know I'm freelancing, and hey, I've got time available. If you know anybody that's got overflow, or if you know anybody, so, and like Tim said, the best contract I got last year was from another programmer who got way overloaded, like by a factor of three, and picked up called two of his friends and says, hey, do you want to come to LA and work?
You passed up a perfectly good opportunity to talk about your pipeline. But sorry, I had to get that one in there because, well, it's Dave Brady. Actually, Dave kind of said what I was trying to get across too, that it is for me not trying to be authentic. I like to think I just am. It's not something I try not to be a fake or try not to be anything that I am not. It's so I still kind of wince a little at the M word at marketing, not Mormons. I like to tease Mormons, though. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just a bad person that way, in a good way.
We set ourselves up sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what I was going to say because I thought you were still going on. Damn it.
I was kind of, and then I lost my train, so I put the mic down. Happens.
Oh, yeah. What I was going to say is actually sales and being authentic is very easy. All you have to do is believe in what you're selling. And as a freelancer,
yes.
Yeah, as a freelancer, you should really believe, hey, I'm good at this and I have a service to provide. Then it almost becomes not sales anymore. It doesn't become sales. It becomes the reason I tell people, hey, I run a company to help you out is because I know I can solve their problems. And I know right now there's such a demand for senior skilled Rubyists that I can solve problems they probably desperately need. So it's less about being sort of markety or inauthentic as much as get that in the conversation somewhere just in case, hey, I might be able to help them out. Mm-hmm. And yes, I make good money doing it. That happens to be nice also.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that ties back to what you were saying about charging more for consulting than coding. Is that it comes back to that value proposition, you know. Is that value there for them? And if it is, then why shouldn't I get paid?
And that value is not there for me if it's like, oh, why don't you fly in for 2 days, right, like help us out and then take off? And it's like, I need to actually have dependable work. If you want that, it's going to cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also have a slightly different attitude as not a pure freelancer anymore running a small company where it's sort of that borderline between a big firm and freelancing, so occasionally I might look at it in a slightly, it is a business, because I am essentially becoming a business person. Like, mm-hmm. I do less daily dev work and more of consulting, and that has definitely started to shift some of my views on these topics.
One of the most helpful things, mental shifts that I have made in this regard is that JT Zemp, my partner at Slide Rule Labs, we've started to use the word hack when it comes to people skills. So right now we're hacking sales and marketing. Right now we're hacking business. We're hacking biz dev. We're hacking startup. And that somehow it calms down the freaked out engineer inside of us. And we can go, oh, I can just approach this like any other tractable problem. You know, it's just NP hard. And it's got people skills. So there's a lot of hidden variables. And but now, wait a minute, my standard approach does apply here, to misquote Randall Monroe from XKCD, because now I can start experimenting with things, I can start trying things. For example, here on the Ruby Rogues,
Podcast, although you guys haven't had me yet.
This is the sleep deprivation podcast. But yeah, here on the Ruby Freelancers podcast, by the way, I'm available for hire. I just wanted to get that plug in there.
So while Dave's getting that plug in there, the one point I was going to make to something Tim said earlier was, as far as that elevator pitch, when I speak at conferences, I always get in, I'm a freelancer, I'm always looking for work. That's just easy. So I don't necessarily have to go around to conferences and tell people, hey, I'm a freelancer. I mean, I do anyway whenever they ask, hey, what do you do for a living? But when I'm on the stage in front of a microphone, at some point I say, hey, I'm Evan, I'm a freelancer, and I'm looking for work. Problem solved.
I think a number of developers look at people skills and marketing and sales as not fitting their personality type, sort of over almost worshiping this concept of, well, I'm an introvert, therefore, and I fit this coder personality, therefore I won't be good at these. Whereas just that sort of dedicated mindset to learning skills applies just as much for marketing, sales, and other skills. And honestly, you can't really be good, really, really good at technical sales unless you did used to program. Like, I can't hire someone else to sell for myself or my company because they're gonna totally overpitch things and not know how to do it, and no one's gonna believe them. Mm-hmm. So I've had to learn some sales skills, and yeah, it turns out they aren't that much different from any other skill set. Like, you examine the problem, determine what approach you're gonna take, and fucking practice.
Yep.
Which is why the conference is nice, because you get lots of time to chat with people and see in which different settings, oh, hey, you guys are short but looking for one of the more common pickups tasks for freelancers is, oh, you're trying to hire. Would you like some help while you're hiring? Mm-hmm. Would you like to get some of these things done instead of waiting 6 months until you can find this mythical senior available like Rubyist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one other thing that I want to point out is that in a lot of cases, you can make yourself stand out. And one example of this is just I reached out to the Apache Foundation last year, and I was just, you know, I just got in contact with somebody I knew who's involved over there. I actually did an interview with him for my Teach Me to Code podcast, and then I said, hey, there are some other interesting projects. I mean, like Hadoop, things like that. I was like, hey, who do I talk to for that? And so he got me in touch with their press person, who got me in touch with their conference organizer, and I wound up going to ApacheCon North America last year. And the cool thing is you start talking to them, and you find out real fast what even the conference organizers are interested in. And so I talked to the organizer, I talked to the press lady. They put me in touch with the president of the Apache Foundation. So by the time I showed up, I mean, they were all geared up for me to show up because I was a podcaster, and they wanted exposure. I mean, I was like the only person that got a press pass to that conference because I was the only coder who was actually doing some kind of press thing. But the cool thing is if you can get in touch with the conference organizer, you have something that they want, something that they're interested in, be it exposure or something else. You can usually work things out so that they start introducing you around. Because I'll tell you what, at those conferences, the people who know who's there are the organizers. Oh, yeah. They know who the sponsors are. They know who the big names are. And not only that, but they have like a direct line to them, especially while they're at the conference. So what winds up happening is, you know, you go and you say, who should I get to know? And man, they'll hook you up. You know, so you go to lunch with the big names, you get, you know, and you can at least gain some credibility that way. And a lot of times, if they have that kind of credibility, people are either approaching them trying to hire them, and sometimes they don't have time, so then you get referrals that way, or you can work something out, so you wind up working with them. And so there are a lot of things there. You can also get, like I said, introduced to some of the sponsors, and you can start figuring out what they want. I know for a fact that at least three of the sponsors that are on that banner over there that you people who are live streaming can't see, and I guess you people who are listening to the podcast can't see either. I know at least three of the sponsors on the banner hanging in this room are hiring, and that is one of the primary motivations for them sponsoring this conference, is to get their name up there so that they can hire people.
And I assume all of them are hiring, probably.
Yeah. So the whole point is then you can do what Tim said, and since you're getting to know the conference organizer, you can exploit that direct line, get noticed, get up there, and then, you know, maybe make that pitch and say, look, you know, I know you're trying to fill some spots. Maybe me or some of my guys, you know, on my team or some of my subcontractors or something can kind of help bridge that gap until you find somebody.
And speaking as someone who does organize a conference, I have to agree with what Chuck said with RubyD Camp. I know the sponsors. I have aligned all the to them all in some degree, and I know who the big people are at RubyD Camp, such as it is. So yeah, that can work.
You are the big people at RubyD Camp.
Only in terms of mass. Yes, I will admit that.
So I just had kind of an epiphany based on what you guys have all just said. You know, talk to people that are hiring and say, hey, do you need, you know, help crossing that unicorn gap. And Chuck's talking about finding a press pass, and you're talking about organizers. And what I'm realizing is that for the past 5 or 10 years, I don't think I've ever gotten a job by walking in the front door and applying for a job. If you walk up to somebody and say, I want a job, and they say, well, I'm hiring, now they have to begin this whole vetting process. There's this, you know, application, there's this test, we gotta find out who you are. I've taken the side door in to pretty much every job I've ever had for the past decade.
Same here.
And the thing that I just realized is, especially with the press pass idea, is if you're looking to market and network and you want to stay authentic and you don't, and you're afraid of the sales, the reason you're afraid of it is because that's walking in through the front door and trying to convince somebody who does not know you. People work with who they like and people that they know. So if you want to get hired as a freelancer, find a reason to be around the people. Find you know, go to a watering hole where other people are and find a reason for people to want you to be there. Bring something to the table. Bring a podcast. Bring something else.
Let's bring this full circle, because it started with marketing at conferences. Mm-hmm. So this is why organizing conferences is good, although it's not why I started organizing D-Camp. I wasn't even a freelancer or thinking about it then. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I speak at conferences. It's one of the reasons I go to conferences anyway, though I just love them. So doing what you love, believing in what you have to offer, as Tim said, and then going to these events where you can meet other people with similar interests and they can get to know you, which is part of what being on a stage and talking to people is that you're, after fashion, you're introducing yourselves to them. So they become aware of you, they get to know you to some degree, and you build some trust, and maybe they like you. Well, maybe they don't.
No, I just forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead.
I didn't have anything.
Oh, anyone?
I'm good at doing this to you, aren't I, Tim?
Yeah, you throw me off somehow, oddly enough.
We need to work together.
I'll throw some more business lingo at you then. Oh, ABC, always be closing. You don't go, well, not quite that sense, more always be networking. One, Ruby is such a community-driven like language that go to these events, even if you don't drink. I don't drink anymore, even though I'm not Mormon. I'm very not Mormon, but I still don't drink. But you still go out to the events.
That's the first step.
Yeah. No, I spent 10...
Dave said that's the first step, if you missed that.
I spent 10 years in Utah. Trust me, the missionaries don't even come by my door.
They probably have you in their database somewhere. Don't even try.
Sorry, I was going to say they probably have Tim in their database for someone to not even try approaching.
No, I spent 2 hours almost unconverting a couple of missionaries, yes. Yeah, so so they do, actually. They're like, no, stay away. It's not, that house is not safe.
You're on their do not call.
Yeah, exactly. For their own safety. No, but it is so community-driven that, yeah, just go... And where you get to know a large part of the community in Ruby is at these conferences. I don't go for the talks because as much. This time, actually, there's a number of talks I haven't known the material, but if you're reading all of the blog posts, which you should be, all like 300 blogs or 500, how many there are now, of common, well-known Rubyists, you know a lot of the material in the talks. Conferences are worth it, even if you knew the material in every single talk, just to get to know your fellow Rubyists who might... Someday you might want to hire, who might hire you, who might employ you as a contractor. Mm-hmm. So that's what I meant by always be closing, really always be networking. Also, even outside of this, a couple of my larger, more prestigious projects that have turned into like years of work before came from hobbies I have. That I was riding the ski lift with someone because I used to be a competitive bump skier, and he's saying, oh, what do you do? I'm like, well, I run this company doing this, and he's like, oh, why? What are your rates? And he ran a company out in New York where rates were so much different that he heard my Utah rates, and he's like, yeah, we should talk.
I'm going to pop the conversational stack to something that Tim said a moment ago. After you go to enough tech conferences, or at least for any one topic, a lot of the topics start to sound the same. Granted, this year's Mountain West has been truly exceptional in terms of tech topics as for me, but I don't go to these conferences for the talks. I totally go for the hallway track and the back channel, and frankly, it's entirely why I made Decamp, because once I realized I don't go for the talks, I go to hang out with awesome people and share a good time with them and learn from them and teach a little bit. That's where Decamp came from, was that realization.
One of the most frustrating experiences I ever had was with Mountain West RubyConf, not with the conference, but Chuck and I were working together at a company, and we had converted basically an entire company of PHP programmers to Ruby, and they were willing, they were complicit in their conversion, and
most of that was Dave. Most of that had happened before I got there.
Okay, but we convinced them all to switch to Rails and Ruby, and I convinced the company to buy a ticket to every single one of them, for every single coder to come to Mountain West. And that was the first year that we live streamed, and every single one of those SOBs, except for me and Chuck, stayed home and watched it on the live stream. And I'm like, well, we got most of the conference because we watched it on video, and I'm like, you got 10% of the conference. The whole reason, I mean, like, I sat at this conference, and sure, there were these things going by over my head, but that's because I was hacking, I was chatting with people, and, mm-hmm. and the whole point of, I love podcasting with you when you don't have a mic, because there's a back channel up here, and it's messing with my head.
Now you know how I feel with the Skype chat channel that's on the podcast.
That's awesome.
And it's funny, because Jeff and Eric and Evan, they'll Like, I'll be introducing the podcast, and they'll be typing random crap into the chat just to try and get me to trip up.
Damn, I didn't swear.
Awesome. It's really, really funny. But anyway, I want to roll back to something else that Dave was talking about, where he said that he only ever got a job through the side door. And if you go read Get Clients Now, you're going to figure out pretty fast that the whole purpose of getting that pipeline going, you get people in the pipeline and you pursue them, sure. Mm-hmm. But the real trick is getting them to come to you and ask you to work for them. It's not the hard sell of, you want me to work for you, right? You want me to work. You want me to work for you, right? You sure? You need my help, don't you?
It's a combination, I think. It's you want people to come to you, and having like a website and a blog and videos and being on speaker rate and all that stuff is great, because it's a credibility indicator. Like, if you meet a stranger, like, who is this guy? Oh, holy crap, this is Chuck. This is the guy from Teach Me to Code. Okay, huge credibility indicator. But another big piece of it, of these marketing books like Get Clients Now or Book Yourself Solid, is while you're waiting for people to come to you, they give you this plan for manufacturing as many side doors as possible in the town that you're in. You know?
You don't listen to our podcast, do you? Because we talked all about that in like episode one or two.
Yeah. Well, we're...
Okay, yeah. It's Clients Now is my favorite marketing book. Thank you.
Well, this podcast today is 50% Mormon, so I'm going to use the word tracting. Knocking on the door, you know, knocking on Tim's door and saying, hi, what do you know? Oh, it's you.
Knock, knock, knocking on Tim's door.
Sorry. So I totally forgot one of the things I was going to say, but the most important one, and I'll admit I'm a little disappointed that we don't have too much of a live audience here, and the only reason I'm disappointed is that what a lot of people don't get, and I understood as a full-time employee a little more than 5 years, but if you're going to 3 years, about 8 years ago, is that the only difference between being a freelancer and a full-time employee is whether you actually invest in your career and get out and share with people what it is you like to do and what you can do for them. Otherwise, because having people come to you and have, that's what clued me in, is what Dave said, is that having the people come to you and have them want you to work for them. I got the pronouns right, that was hard. But getting that, I get most of my clients that way, that most of them come to me. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Mm-hmm. But that works for full-time, you know, careerist people too, and a lot of people just don't get that.
Yeah, so I actually want to say something. All the time, just by default. So there's like five people in the room, because we did this ad hoc, and we're doing it at lunch. So I have actually uploaded to Flickr a picture of our audience, which is, you know, just the center aisle, which is the empty part, all the people that are here up on the sides. However, I'm getting, just for the panelists' benefit, I am getting tweets from people watching us on the live stream. Uh-huh. So people watching on the live stream, I am checking Twitter, so if you have any questions for us, send them to @dbrady on Twitter, and we'll get them asked.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ask questions about poop.
The only thing I hate more than hearing my own voice is watching myself on video, so now I'm aware of the camera that I was safely ignoring. Thank you, Dave.
Networking is networking, and you should come to these events and meet everyone, because right now maybe you're looking for work. Tomorrow maybe you're looking to hire someone. Maybe in a year from now maybe you want a steady job, and building your network and your community and getting to know your fellow Rubyist works, whether it's sales, works whether you're hiring, it's all the same. So I'm at these events, going to conferences for the purpose of marketing. Go to conferences to meet people and network. It turns out you'll do marketing and hiring and everything else while you're doing that, just as part of it. Are you going to read tweets or?
Yeah. So one thing I want to just add to that is that before I went freelance, I had built quite a network. I mean, through all the different things I had been doing, and Yeah, I did a talk at Ruby Web Conference, and I also, there were a whole bunch of other things that I had done, Teach Me to Code. But building that network made it way easier to find work when I actually did go freelance. Because I literally started just talking to the people that I'd met through the conferences and through some of the other things that I had been doing, And yeah, basically it worked out. I was like, okay, well, I need work. And so I had a few people offering to hire me freelance to get going. So,
but you were doing these things because you liked doing them, right? And so when you stepped into freelancing, it was really more of a matter of stepping into a career of what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, if you've ever tried to maintain a blog, you realize how hard it is, right? Or if you try and record a podcast every week, I mean, it's hard. It's fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, and so you know, I have guys like Evan and Eric and Jeff that come on, and they like to talk and stuff, but ultimately they show up for an hour and they're done. And then I'm responsible for getting it edited, getting the show notes together, getting all that other stuff together, finding sponsors, and, you know, doing all of the other work. And so it's really a lot of work. And so unless you're committed to it, unless you love doing it, it's just kind of rough to get going. But, you know, it really pays off. And you know, doing a podcast and speaking at a conference, I mean, the only difference is that you're doing it every week or every couple weeks.
And I just want to add to that's the reason why ADD Casts is kind of up in the air, semi on hiatus after only about 10 episodes, and Ruby Rogues is now past 40 episodes. My advice to anybody who wants to be on a podcast but doesn't want the work of podcast is track Chuck down, because he starts a new podcast every 3 months.
Yeah, kind of.
That's about my track record, actually. I started this podcast and JavaScript Jabber within 1 week of each other.
Yeah, or just come to a conference and you'll get shanghaied into a podcast you weren't even planning on. Mm-hmm. Which someone asked if I was cold. Yes, Brian, I am cold. I'm also hungry, so maybe I'll just sort of eat him and then warm up.
And that's why I put Dave next to him instead of me. We both got a little bit of extra meat, but I'd rather Dave be eaten, not me.
Okay, a lot of extra meat.
So do we have any other questions from Twitter? Because if we don't, then what I'll probably do is just let us do some quick picks, and then we'll go get lunch.
Daryl... Oh, God. Duchette? Doucette? Sorry, Daryl. What common tool sets would you guys recommend for freelancers?
The same ones as for any other Rubyist?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. I mean, unless you're talking about for running your business, but even then, I mean, there are a lot of companies out there using something like Harvest or FreshBooks or...
I used Harvest. Everyone uses QuickBooks, unfortunately.
Nice Quicken.
Okay, really? Because I hate I hate Intuit in general and hate QuickBooks, but if you're at the point of actually having subcontractors and et cetera, it's sort of what you use. Supposedly the online version is better nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm using the online version. I'm also using Harvest, sponsor of the podcast. Thank you very much.
There's actually a fantastic question from Twitter from Matt Nielsen. I know you guys have talked about this on Ruby Rogues before, because on whatever the hell podcast this is.
Where are you? What city are you in?
It's not a variable. It's hard-coded. In Ruby Freelancers.
What's your name?
I'm sure.
Batman. it's
I got it. Matt Nielsen asks, I think, one of the most dangerous questions. If you've got a W-2 job, this is the question I get asked most as a freelancer by people with W-2 jobs. How do you get over the fear of losing that steady paycheck? And I can give a real quick answer for me, which was I worked for a government contractor and I got laid off. And so there was no way in heck I was going to lose that steady paycheck. And then, bam, I lost the steady paycheck. And that's a really bad way to get over it. So I'd love to know if there's a good way to get over it.
Yeah, well, I kind of...
Savings?
Yeah.
What a concept. For one thing you'll discover as a freelancer is you are going to get screwed your first year in taxes if you aren't very, very careful. So an accountant is definitely another thing. But just put 30 to 40% of everything you make on every paycheck in savings. You'll be able to pay the IRS, and you'll actually have a little cushion too. Because at first the money will seem so good, you're getting all this cash, and you won't realize, oh yeah, that's because I'm not getting self-employment tax taken out, et cetera, and it'll bite you. So ideally, I would say if you can save 50% of your money, 30% will go to the IRS, and the other 20, you have a little cushion for that. You will not have steady work, particularly at first, so I advise people, count on billing half of the time, unless you're very lucky. Count on billing 20 hours a week. So, one, charge accordingly, and two, save like mad, because
yeah, you might go a month where you're like, sweet, I get to go to the beach every day because I don't have work.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely a lot of things. We've talked about some of them when we talked about getting started, where you can, you know, start maybe moonlighting or, you know, subcontracting part-time, and then you can kind of move over to, you know, so you can make the transition of at least having steady work. But, I mean, really, I think it's a mindset thing. I don't think it's really like a money thing or a risk thing or anything else, because what you're really boiling it down to is it's just as risky for me to be in this job where my boss can decide he hates my guts and fire me tomorrow as it is for me to go and work for a client who may run out of money or have any other business problem and decide they can't afford me anyway. So the real deal is you just kind of have to get past that mindset. And it's kind of hard to do unless you're on the other side. You know, once you've been there, then it's kind of that way. But I mean, for me, what really cracked it for me was that I had had two jobs that I loved. Three jobs that I loved, and then, but the third one got acquired and turned into a job that I hated. And anyway, I could have stayed at the jobs that I hated for as long as I wanted. They wanted me to stay. And the ones that I really loved being at, they had money issues or direction problems and wound up laying me off. And so what it really came down to was, if I can have a job that I love and keep it, then I'd be fine, but I can't do that. It just doesn't work that way. And so, you know, for me it was, well, let me see if I can create a job that I love. And that's where I wound up.
That word right there, create, if you think about it, if you're working a W-2 job and you're terrified of unemployment, it's because you haven't learned to hack the hiring process or hack sales and marketing or networking. And when I first started out, I failed as a freelancer a couple of times because I wasn't willing to go learn sales and marketing and networking and that sort of thing. And now that I think I've got a pretty good handle on it, I have absolutely no fear of losing my steady paycheck because I am now in complete control of the hiring process. If you're working W-2, you are not in control of your career. You are here by someone else's whim.
Yeah, okay, so let's back up a little bit. The one word I keep hearing all the time that people aren't addressing directly is fear. It's not about necessarily money. It's not about the risk of being unemployed. It's not about any of that. It's about being afraid. I don't remember the delicious Mark Twain quote, something about dying a million deaths, but you guys probably know which one I mean.
Heroes die but one death, and cowards die 1,000, or something like that.
That wasn't Mark Twain. He has a much more amusing one than that, and I can't remember it, unfortunately. So what it comes down to, and I always come back to mindfulness practice with regard to business stuff at some point or another, is understanding yourself, because everyone has different fears. So you need to understand, what is it you're afraid of? And then you just have to start knocking them down one at a time. If you're like me and you're afraid of not having enough money to be able to take care of your wife, then you save money. If you're also afraid of not having money, well, another thing you do is you don't have any debt. You pay your credit card off every month. You don't let yourself spend more than you take in. Fairly simple things for me, at least. And I didn't become a freelancer until I had a nice big nest egg, so I was relatively sure I could be unemployed for up to a year and not have, well, I would worry about it, because I start worrying as soon as I don't have work. Even though I have savings, I just hate spending it. But it's all about finding out what you're afraid of and confronting it, which is a good thing to do as a human anyway.
Yeah, and it turns out I'm terrified of working on the same product for 2 years, hence being a freelancer, which actually I want to circle back around to doing what you love and being able to sell people on it is you have to really, to be a freelancer, you have to be willing to be an enabler mainly, and this is why I love doing this, and this is why it's easy for me to pitch, because I love helping people build their product ideas. People all the time be like, well, do you believe in this product? I'm like, I don't have to. I believe in it if the person I am helping believes in it strongly enough that I know that they will pivot when needed and they'll keep going, and then I'd love helping them out. And so because of that, it makes it easy for me, as I said, to not think of it as sales or marketing per se, but as I'm trying to find people that need my help that I can help out. And I love doing that enough that then all of a sudden that fear of having to be a sales guy goes away, because instead
I'm looking for who in this room could I maybe help out? And then that's actually kind of easy to do.
Right, so you're not looking for a client, you're looking for a partner.
Yeah, well, they are a client technically, but yeah, basically.
Right. One more question from Twitter, and then we'll do picks.
Okay. Keysor6 says, podcast question, how do you approach clients who don't have tests or continuous integration and need to be moved in that direction, in your opinion? I have a good answer to this, but I'll open it to the panel first.
So I'll jump on this really quickly. One thing that I have found is that, and you don't play this card directly, but indirectly you can kind of imply that I'm the technical expert. I understand how this stuff works. And you need this in order for me to effectively work. And you can, then you start evangelizing the benefits that they're going to get from it. But you have to have that level of trust first. And if they're not seeing you as, this is my technical expert on this project, they're just, you know, trying to tell them that they need to change something is really hard.
So first off, I want to answer his question, but I want to go back to what we were just saying before, because there was one last thing I had to get in. And that's the whole concept of doing what you love. And don't become a freelancer because you want to get rich. I mean, you can earn more money. You can earn more. Yeah, okay. Chuck was laughing. Dave was nodding his head furiously. You can work as many hours as a full-time person and earn more money, but you will lose a lot of hair like Dave and Chuck, or it'll go gray like mine. Or maybe you'll have strange jewelry like Tim. I don't know. He doesn't have it today. It's all gone now. It all fell out, I guess. sorry. So no, you get into freelancing because you do what you love and you want to have more control, more choice about what it is what you do. If you're doing what you love, you're going to perform better than you did when you were just a full-time slob. You can get a job as a full-time not slob doing something you love also, but the trouble is you do have less control over your career that way. It's just a matter of if you can do what you love, you will do better, and your career will be the better for it. You will be happier, and your whole family will probably be happier. Now back to the tweet, right? What was the question? I had the answer.
How do you approach clients without tests?
Right. Chuck was approaching it from the position of subtlety. I don't do subtle. So I usually tell them, you don't have tests. Your entire code base is legacy code. You have no proof that anything actually works. So any changes that I make are liable to break anything in your application. Not that I'm necessarily a shitty coder, but I TDD. I write tests, but I TDD for a reason. I'm a much better coder when I have tests backing me up, and I know that I'm free to change things. So I will, for clients who do not have tests, I will insist every new bit of code I write has tests. Anything that I touch will get tests. It's that simple. If they won't do it, I don't work with them. I have standards. I will not deviate from some of them.
I was going to say I'm apparently the moral relativist and incrementalist on the panel, because I approach it as a positively of saying, hey, well, not that it's good they don't have tests, but of the things I will help them with, which is, yeah, this is a problem, you don't have tests, but I don't try to say, oh, we have to retest everything in there. But yeah, when you write new code, it will have tests. And wherever I have a chance to, when I'm touching old code, or at least write characterization tests that cover it. And this will put you, even if we didn't get through all the features, your code base will be better off for it. So if you look at it the right
light... You're saying the same thing I am, you're just sugarcoating it more.
Yeah, well, that's why I said positively. Everything is an angle that you can put on it of, hey, here's how I'm going to help you out. And this is a sign maybe I'm too much becoming like an MBA. I should go back to school or something. Yes. But everything is an angle to point out, hey, this is how I could help you. Mm-hmm. And so take that negative and say, this sucks, but it'll be better when we're done.
Right. So it comes down to a value add again.
Yes. Yeah.
So I love having gotten a little bit older as a programmer, because now I can kind of take Chuck's position and go in and say, you need to shut up, Evan.
Thank you. I feel better now.
Yes. Go to your corner. All right. So as an older programmer, more wizened, I guess, I get to come in with a little bit of, this is for the live stream, by the way. Anyway, I get to come in and basically be a little bit more of an authority figure, and people take me more at my word. And so if I come in, like I started unit testing when I was like 25 and 28. And I was the young upstart on most teams. And so my ideas were young upstart ideas, and so they were rejected. So so for those of you that are over 40, just say, because I said so. Now I'm going to take what Evan said and take the asshole out of it, and give you two specific things that you can do to help people that aren't testing. The first thing is to be aware that testing, not testing, is about ego. People don't want to test their code because they don't want to believe that their code might not work. And that's just a foolish, stupid, and wrong idea. Watch my talk from yesterday on Justin TV. It's a very left brain, I know what I know and what I don't know, I refuse to exist, can possibly be there. So be aware that you're up against that. So what you need is something that you can say that they know is provably true and absolutely certain, and it's this. If you write, so many lines of code, you're going to add so many bugs. And if you write so many lines of code of test code, you've just doubled the chance that you're going to write a bug. That is true. In exactly the same way that it is true that if you work a math problem, you have a certain amount of creating an error. If you go back and check your math, you have increased the chance that you will cause a math error. But you have actually significantly decreased the chance of getting the wrong answer.
Yeah.
So that's when people say twice as much code, twice as much errors, I say check your, it's checking your math.
And you don't have to be 40 to bring it all the way back around. All you have to do is come speak at conferences, build your name, and then people will come to you, A, saying, we don't have tests, would you fix them? Or come to you as the expert, and then you will say, the first thing we need to do is fix this.
Actually, that's a really good point. Go read Crush It, read Book Yourself Solid, read Get Clients Now. You can be 25 and walk into a room and say, you're testing mofos because I said so. And if you have built up enough credibility by contributing to open source and gotten lucky and won the fame lottery, people will say, yes, sir.
Yep. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into picks. We didn't warn Tim ahead of time. Basically, what we do is we just pick a couple of things. I mean, they're going to be products, movies, TV shows. We've picked all kinds of stuff. But basically, it's just anything that makes your life easier. You know, sometimes they're related to what we talked about, and sometimes they're not. So, I mean, on Ruby Rogues, we typically see Josh every once in a while will come back around and say, okay, this is what I'm watching on Netflix. So, I mean, it really can be anything. And I'll go ahead and get started first. I was playing around with some stuff. I'd been talking to some people about some CRMs, and I'd used HiRISE quite a long time ago, and I just couldn't get a solid workflow around it. And so really, I think the problem was that I was using Gmail and HiRISE, and they really don't talk to each other automatically. And so what I've done is I went out and I just started looking at what options there were for tying them together, and I found this software. It's called YesWare, and what it is it's actually a widget that goes into your Gmail, and you can track all of the different deals that you're working on in there. But the other thing it does is it adds like canned responses to your replies. So you can reply, and then you click the category, and then you can pick the one. So it's kind of like Text Expander that way. Except you're using the mouse and clicking buttons instead of typing in character sequences. But the other thing that's nice is that it adds an automatic blind CC to Dropbox, and you can turn that on and off just by checking and unchecking. And so it's really handy that way, and it's actually improved my workflow in tracking the deals that I have going, so that I know which ones I'm working on, know which ones I've won, know which ones I've lost, and I can kind of keep track of that. I have found that it only works for me in Chrome. I use Mailplane for my email, but I've had to, when I'm doing any kind of this email work, I actually have to do it in Chrome because I have to have the extension installed. So that is kind of a downside. But yeah, my picks this week are HiRISE and YesWare, just because they've been working so well for me. So.
And this week I actually have a piece of software for a pick instead of some pithy or trite piece of advice. I've been using an app on my iPhone for the past month or so called Happiness, spelled correctly, by Good to Hear Limited. This is actually the second version of their app. The first version didn't have as pretty of a UI, but had slightly more functionality. So the point of the app is quite simply when you are happy or unhappy about something, you go into it and on a scale of 1 to 5, positive or 1 to 5 negative, like, you know, Dave Brady telling me he's taking the asshole out of me, -5. Sorry. No, on a Happiness app, you go in and you give it a score, and then you put some tags on it, and you say, well, this is what made me feel this way. And then it gives you something, it's not a pie chart, but something like that, which shows you proportionately what things have affected you and how they've affected you. And it's been somewhat interesting and revealing for me to, in some cases, get validation for the things that I think tick me off the most. In other cases, find out that some really little things in my life disproportionately piss me off. So, what, you piss me off?
Some days, I think.
No, Chuck doesn't piss me off, but Dave is an asshole. No, well, he is, but I just put that in there for vengeance, but I love him. So I kind of dig this app because, well, I don't reflect as much as I feel like I should, and so it's a good reminder to know how things have been going and what has been happening to me and what things have been doing to me. So it's like a very lightweight journaling system, but I find it effective and it helps me course correct a little in life.
I like to think of myself as an asshole joke.
As an asshole joke.
Asshole jerk?
Think about it. Where do poop jokes come from?
Yes. Asshole joke. Right.
All right. So I have two picks. One I have given on another podcast, which I will not name because I've called this podcast that one so many times. But related to happiness, there's a fantastic book by Marty Seligman called Learned Optimism. Yes. It is the most incredible book for hacking happiness in your brain. The biggest problem with this book is that it's very hard to give it to someone because you're calling them a pessimist, or you're saying you're a downer, man, you need this. And what it is this book will make you happy. It's just amazing because it really gets into the science and of optimism and pessimism and how to actually hack it and change it in yourself. My second pick is a technical one, which is SendGrid. If you're freelancing, or especially if you're working for like a consulting shop, well, if you're freelancing solo, you need to try and step up your game and try to act like you're working as a consultant shop. And SendGrid is an email delivery system. Basically, you can bind in, like do a mail merge in Thunderbird and send your mail through SendGrid. And basically what they do is they give you back metrics. They tell you how many people opened your mail, how many people, you know, clicked on the link. They give you analytics on what you did. And if you are a one-person shop and you have 50 friends or 100 acquaintances and you're looking to fill the pipeline, that could be another poop joke if you wanted, but if you're looking to fill the pipeline, wink, wink, you can send out these mails to your mailing list and you can find out what works and what doesn't. And you know, what you can measure, you can manage, and SendGrid is a fantastic way to do it.
I'm going to prove myself a Luddite. The best reminders replacement ever, the original, a notebook. I have in the last
analog.
Couple months just always started carrying a notebook small enough to fit in a pocket because it actually takes less time to whip it out, write something down than it does to enter in a reminder. So I use reminders for like my long running tasks of when I sit down at the end of the day, I go over my notes and put down things I'm not going to get to and make my next day's to-do list. I don't have a fancy GTD folded thing, just a freaking notebook you can put in your pocket. You
and
can
I use a fancy piece of GTD software because I never want to lose the things I write down in the notebook because I always lose notebooks. But I never lose my phone permanently.
That can be a problem, definitely. And I do the combo, as I said. I use reminders also because it is nice to have it in iCal and everyone else, but sort of the urgent daily tasks are handy. If I can't fit it on one small notebook sheet, I'm not going to get through it that day.
All right, well, thanks, guys. That was terrific. So we've been doing this for about an hour. That's usually when we wrap up. So, you know, just want to thank you guys once again. Really quickly, since we're all kind of doing the freelance or running our own little consultancy or something, really quickly, We're just going to go down the line, and you can tell people how to find you if they want to hire you. So I think the best place to go for me right now is teachmetocode.com. Up in the top right, there's my email address and phone number. So if you do need some freelance help or some help with like NoSQL or things like that, then I'm definitely available for that.
I actually make myself extremely difficult to reach. That way I know that my clients really want to work with me that badly. No, I'm just kidding. Damn it, no one laughed at that one. But easiest way to get a hold of me, thanks, Dave, would just be hello@tripledogdare.net. Triple Dog Dare is my company, yes, a Christmas story.
Do you have a catch-all on tripledogdare.net?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay, so you can reach Evan at ilovesexwithpigs@tripledogdare.net.
Or asshole@tripledogdare.net. Yeah, yeah. I think all those will all go to the same place, which is straight to hell.
Yes. Yeah. Don't you answer to those anyway?
You
usually
can find me at sliderulelabs.com. I'm david.brady@sliderulelabs.com. We also have a catch-all, so you can send all those same. You can send an email to evanlight@sliderulelabs.com, and
then you're really not hiring me.
I will be happy to reply. Slide Rule Labs, where the motto we have is we'll fix your $5 haircut, we'll give you a fantastic haircut, and we'll even come in and train your barber.
CloudCityDevelopment.com, a lean/agile startup with a focus particularly in the MVP space. I'm Timocratic everywhere. That's Tim O'Cratic, as in Democratic with a Tim. On Twitter, GitHub, Gmail, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. So Twitter's Charles is CmaxW. I'm E Light. D Brady is asshole. I mean, D Brady. And you already got Timocratic.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys. And thanks for everybody on the live feed. And yes, if you're catching this in the RSS feed off of iTunes or something, you can find us there. You know, you can get the past shows. And definitely, if you're in iTunes, you're checking out the podcast, leave us a review, let us know what you thought, and we'll catch you all next week.